work session number 22344, reel 8.
Major Grace, reel 8. I was asking you about the ground over which you'd passed, whether you'd been on roads or tracks or going cross country.
I think it was arable, but as it was so dark, you couldn't really tell what the country was like. Occasional shrubs loomed up. We always thought a shrub, of course, was moving, but it wasn't. It was just a shrub. And the darkness plays tricks of light and shadow, as you can imagine. However, we were going very slowly, obviously on purpose. But however, we got over this wall, and then I realised that there was a hill. You could just make out the outline of a hill. It looked as if it was probably a tree-covered hill, not very high, a bit ahead of us. So we stopped and listened, and sure enough, we heard sounds which, again, were unmistakable, of things like rifles being moved, or no sound of voices, but just the clicks of metal, which made it clear. So I thought, we'll try and ambush them. So I left one section where we were, ready to fire, and then I went round to one flank, and then at a pre-arranged sign from me, the section that I'd left behind opened fire, and we waited to see what had happened. And within a few minutes, the Germans evidently realised they were being attacked, and being in an awkward position on the top of the hill, they evidently decided to attack us. So instead of attacking down towards the sound of where our fire had been coming from, they went down the hill right towards where me and my two sections were waiting. And of course they couldn't see us, being a very dark night, and so we had an extraordinary battle. They were rushing through us, and they didn't know where we were, and we couldn't really quite see where they were either. So we had a bit of a hand-to-hand skirmish, and then eventually some of them got right through us and went rushing on down beyond us, down the slope. And behind us, they'd left behind one German with a badly shattered leg, and I think there were two of our men who were wounded, but not seriously. And so we managed to put first aid dressing on the wounded, and we returned then back to our quarters, this time without having to try and keep quiet. So we scrambled over the wall, making as much noise as we liked, because right behind us, a tremendous outburst of firing, I think it sounded roughly about a mile away, had burst out. There was obviously a big fight going on elsewhere, or else the Germans were alerted, and it was only later that we discovered it was the great battle that the Guards were engaged in, which was another chapter on its own, because it was a very big engagement indeed, with lots of casualties on both sides. However, to come back to us, we managed to get back to our headquarters, and I saw Major Bridgman. He said, go immediately report Colonel Peddy, which I did, and he was very pleased to have this German who, although his leg was badly injured, we managed to bring him home, and no doubt in due course he was questioned when he was well enough to speak.
How did you get him back? Did you have to carry him, or was he able to make
it? I think half carry and half dragged him.
Yes.
And our own two wounded, they were mainly in the arms. I think two chaps had been wounded in a different part of their upper arm or bodies, and so just with the help of their friends, they managed to get back without very serious difficulty.
When you were fighting this little action, this little battle. How had you got your two sections here with you laid out?
Yes, well, of course, we weren't dug in, naturally, because all this happened in a matter of minutes. So we were there just crouching down, facing the hill where we knew the Germans were to begin with, and ready to receive them as they came down right into the middle of our ambush. And I think what they formed, I think I put my two sections just here and there, facing up the hill.
So be left and right in.
Yes, right. And I left. I left it to the section commander to decide where their own men went. I just say to each section commander, your section there, and leave it to them to disperse the men as according to the land.
When the Germans came down the hill, did they come down in any particular discernible?
I don't think so, no. I think they were just a sort of mad scramble. I think they were thoroughly scared and shocked at the violence of the fire, which, although it was only coming from one section, because it all came with a great bang to start with, they probably thought there was far more men firing than actually there were.
How did you? What sign did you give to get your fire section to open up? Do you remember?
I think I can't remember whether I shouted fire or whether I arranged for one rifle shot. Mm. Possibly it was. They may have been too far away to hear my voice, so I probably ordered one rifle to fire one shot, and then they would open up immediately.
Roughly how far away were you from them when
about, let's see now, about 300 or 400 yards by that time.
That's considerable distance.
Quite a difference. Yeah. So it must have been one rifle shot, yes.
Do you have any idea of the number of Germans that you were taking on?
I think, as it was so dark, it was impossible to estimate, but I should imagine it was a company.
Mm. And they just came running down through the lines.
Yes, there was a whole lot of them. Mm. That's why, of course, a lot of them got through,
because
we were only two sections. So I'm sure it must have been about a company that got through, and we managed... I think we probably injured one or two more with our rifle and Bren gun fire, but they managed presumably to
just rush through
and look after their wounded when they got past us. Mm. And it was only the one who had been damaged in his leg, so he was left behind.
Do you remember anything about him, you know, his uniform or his...
No, because he was just... a German, and in the circumstances, he was quickly taken away from us, naturally. He was taken away on a stretcher, of course, as soon as we got to our own lines, because he was badly wounded, so I couldn't tell you.
How did your own two wounded men get on?
Fortunately, I think they were sent back to RAP, of course, but if I remember rightly, they rejoined us after two or three days, so they'd been patched up and they weren't too badly hurt. Yes. So what happened after that? Now, the sequence of events. Are you still on? Yes. Then we come to night four after that. Mm. You on?
Yes.
So the fourth, I don't think very much happened during the day, except for the great guards battle, which I told you about, which had been lasting all night, and tremendous loss of life on both sides. And to make matters worse, there was a tremendous thunderstorm that night. And when the dawn came, it was very wet and watery, and we were told to expect the Germans to attack. But in fact, they'd been so badly mauled by the guards that nothing much happened that night. And so during the afternoon, I think it was, the whole of the Six Gorns were able to march further on. And my particular, the B Company, which had still got fairly good number of uninjured troops, went on to a kind of ridge facing north, not very high ridge, but there was sloping land on both left and right, and a number of trees dotted about here and there. And we were told that that we should dig in to expect a serious German attack that night. And it was, we were warned, of extreme importance that we've got to hold this ridge, because it was on the right-hand side of the British lines. And so if our right hand was to be overwhelmed by the Germans, they could really undermine the whole of the beachhead. So it was absolutely vital that we should stand firm and resist this expected German attack. And headquarters was situated a short, I suppose, about half a mile behind us, in a horrible position by a very smelly farm with a lot of piles of manure. And this was immediately nicknamed Dung Farm, and it was later to be called Horror Farm. And fortunately, the battalion headquarters was just upwind of the smell, so it wasn't too bad to begin with. And my platoon was on the right, and I think 11 and 12 platoons were on the left. They were on the lower ground, so my platoon, or rather B Company, was straddled
the ridge.
Was
this ridge running north-south?
North and south.
So you were holding part of the ridge that was running north-south. You were on the crest.
Yes, right.
And
on the
crest. The other platoons were on the left and right of you.
No, the other we were the right-hand side platoon, and the 11 and 12 were both on the left.
Okay. So they were on lower ground.
I think they were. Yes.
What kind of positions did you construct to make this stout
defense? Well, we dug slit trenches, and they were more or less astride the ridge. So that's to say, facing where we assumed the enemy were going to come from.
I presume that would be north.
North, yes. Mm-hmm. And
did you have a sort of standard layout of sections within your platoon?
Well, not necessarily, because it must always depend on the lie of the land. Mm-hmm. But on this particular, it was quite a broad sloping ridge, so there's no reason why I shouldn't have the sections in line.
So we've got three sections.
Three sections are all able to fire. And
roughly how broad was your sector? What sort of perimeter were you?
I think about 50 yards. So there would be quite a gap between each section's position, but not so that they were disconnected. I mean, we could, say, if necessary, shout to each other, but otherwise there was just that, so that we could extend a little bit more and cover a greater line of fire.
Did you have any wire or mines to strengthen?
No, nothing like that. We just had our own weapons, nothing else. And when the night came, it was again very dark with a light rain falling, and Major Bridgman had said that the messages coming from battalion was that an attack was imminent and that we've got to hold our positions whatever happens. And sure enough, very soon after nightfall, when it was quite dark, there was a big German bombardment, shelling from their artillery. And fortunately, by then, we had dug in quite well, and the ground, although wet, enabled us to get at least our heads down. And so we just had to crouch down at the bottom of the trenches until the bombardment finished. But it went on for a long time, and it was very frightening. But it was extraordinary, really, how much shells landed in our midst without really causing many casualties. It lifted after about an hour, I think, and so Major Bridgman came round and visited us in the dark, and he asked us all how we were, and it turned out that there were only a number of men. One or two men had been killed and one or two wounded, but not as much as one might have expected from such a bombardment.
What was the soil like then? You said you were able to get underground.
It must have been, if it was arable land, you see, it was probably been ploughed up, so it wasn't very difficult to dig. I think we managed to get quite satisfactory trenches to get low enough to be protected. And so unless really a shell actually landed inside one of our trenches, there was a very good chance that, although earth may have splattered down on top of us, it didn't actually cause much in the way of casualties. And then that's right. The next was, as expected, as soon as there was silence, a German patrol came to order us. It was obviously a fighting patrol, and as, of course, we were always instructed to do, we held our fire until the last moment, until in the darkness we could just make out the dim outlines of the Germans as they approached. And then when they were very near, I shouted fire, and then with all our weapons we gave a great burst of fire, Bren guns, mortars, everything you can think of, all firing at once. And that really sounded quite formidable, although we were only just this small number. And the Germans obviously went to ground, and we thought they'd probably withdrawn. But there was we heard one German shouted, "Otto, Otto, Hilfe, ich sterbe," and his cries went on, and they gradually got fainter and fainter, but no one came to help poor Otto. But we realised then that our fusillade had been affected, and we'd at least driven them back this time. And again Major Bridgman came to visit us, and he was pleased that we'd driven them off, of course, but he said, this is obviously, that was just a fighting patrol, the real assault is yet to come. And
do you have any idea of what their numbers might have been on that occasion?
Well, usually a German fighting patrol is about 50, because our fighting patrols were usually one patrol, that means about 40 men. But I'm not quite sure how they divided up, but I think about 50 or 60 constituted their usual sort of fighting patrol. But whether it was that on this occasion, I can't be quite sure.
Do you have any idea of how close they were before you gave the order to shoot?
Because the night was so dark, we couldn't have seen them very, very soon, so they must have been, I think, within perhaps about 25 yards when we gave this final burst, which sent them reeling.
They didn't shoot back at you?
No, I don't think so. Not at that time. Perhaps they realised that they perhaps they thought we were much stronger than they really were, and that wasn't within their orders to attack in strength. Perhaps they like us were just sent out to capture a prisoner or two, which on this occasion they didn't.
Did you find poor Otto?
No, we didn't. But on the other hand, a little later, I thought it's important to find out what's going on, because we could hear various sounds, metallic sounds and that sort of thing. They weren't actually firing, so I went forward a little further to see if I could hear anything clearer. And sure enough, I heard a German officer evidently speaking on the wireless, his wireless. And as fortunately, I could understand his German. I couldn't nowadays. He was saying, yes, my company is here digging in, and number one company is behind, and number three is on my left. So from that, I realized that I was up at least three German companies in strength, only just a short distance in front of us. Sorry. So I came back as silently and quietly as I could, naturally reported this to Major Bridgman at once.
So you've gone out on your own?
Yes.
How far did you
go? Oh, not very far, I think. Only about 20 yards, I think, was really all that was necessary to hear, because, as I say, they were very close. Anyway. But I got near enough so that I could hear what this German was saying. So we were more than ever ready for an attack, and Major Bridgman said, I'm hoping that we're going to have the support of tanks. But we've been promised five Sherman tanks may be on the way to help. So we hope that they'll be with you so that you can attack before the Germans can attack us. And so it all depends. Now, if the tanks don't come, there's nothing for it. You'll just have to fight your way out. And number 11 platoon can give you covering fire, and you, Ted, will have to just fight your way through with the help of their covering fire. And so that wasn't a very promising idea at all, just one platoon against three companies. So we were more or less biting our nails for several hours. And the final word was, at the first light at dawn, you must make your attack, whether the tanks come or not. And to my, I'm sure, everyone's foreboding, the first light at dawn just began to show. And then at the last moment, when we knew that we would have to go into the attack without any further delay, the company runner came up, hold on a minute, at least one tank is coming now. And more or less, as he was saying, I heard a tremendous bang just behind me, and this was a Sherman tank firing at some target in front of him. And so we knew at last we were going to have at least one tank to help us. And it was almost as though a referee had blown the whistle for the two attacks to start together, because the German attack with a big outburst of firing started just at the same time. And then as the Sherman tank advanced through our positions, then that was the sign for us to do our attack with the tank. And I think you remember I told you that when we were in Swaffham, when I first joined the Gordons, what we were doing then was the training of combined ops with tanks. And so here, at last, the opportunity was to practice what we had learned. And so, obviously, with so much firing coming towards us, the tank commander was not able to open up the turret. So there was no communication directly between me and the tank. So as we knew exactly what we had to do, and the tanks knew also what we were expecting to do, we section by section, we moved, ran up to the tank, waited, and did a kind of leapfrogging attack with the tank. And that really was immensely effective, because the tank was able to blaze off with its... what is the tank? Sherman tank artillery.
Mostly had a 75mm
75,
gun.
That's right, yes. So it blazed off with its 75 and machine guns, and then we had our Brens and all our rifles and so on. And in the end, we got through. And the Germans retreated, and fortunately we were able to actually round them up, and we brought, eventually, as the light really got quite bright, we brought back about 100 prisoners. So it was a remarkable success from that point of view, and we didn't lose many men. I think a few were knocked over by the German fire, of course, and their artillery, but they seemed a bit disorientated by the surprise Sherman tank, which they hadn't bargained for at all, I'm glad to say.
Do you think it was the shock effect of the tank turning up and supporting
yes,
you that had
I do, yes.
disconcerted
and
them?
Again, because of course, once we knew the tank was there and it had fired, then once again we were able to open up with all our rifles and Brens and things, and the other platoons on the left were able to join in. Yes. So all together it was an unexpected victory, although only temporary. But it was interesting to note that one of the German officers who we captured, I walked back with him, with the other German prisoners, and I spoke to him, and it turned out that he was the very officer whose voice I'd heard revealing about their positions.
You were speaking to him in German?
Yes.
Mm. What was he like to talk to? I mean, what impression did you get of him?
He was very polite, and it was almost as if we'd had a football match together and they'd lost. Like two captains talking together at the end of a football match.
When you started going forward with your tank, what did the Germans do? Did they carry on with their own attack, or did they retire to their defensive positions?
Well, I think that their attack was more or less broken off. Their firing was a bit spasmodic and
uncoordinated.
Uncoordinated, exactly, yes. Mm. So although they were blazing off... They didn't really seem to aim very well, as if they were just firing out of the sheer scared of the tank.
What sort of positions did they have? Did you actually overrun their defensive positions?
Yes, they had dug in, just as we'd expected. And I think, again, because the ground on this particular place was pretty soft, they'd managed to get fairly good sort of temporary slip trenches.
Were their trenches similar to yours, or were they different in any significant way?
Not that I think very similar, because you see, they weren't properly organised trenches.